Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Hosting with me is October Hollum. October, how you doing?
I'm great, Chris. Thank you for having me today.
Of course. Today, our guest is Susan Bradford. Before we bring her on, a couple of announcements. Coming March 11th, 12th, and 13th, we've got Forbidden Knowledge News Con. We're going to feature 8 amazing presenters, and it's going to be online with a Rockfin premium membership. And that means you can get the entire conference for only $10. All you have to do is sign up through the link in the description, and you're going to get access to not only the conference, but all our premium content and all the content from every creator on Rockfin. And you can always get new free episodes on Rockfin, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms. Check out the podcasts we feature on the Forbidden Knowledge Network. You get those on our website, forbiddenknowledge.news. And follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Those links are all in the description as well. With the state of the supply chain right now, it would be a great idea to invest in an emergency food supply from My Patriot Supply. They are the experts in emergency preparedness, and right now, if you order their emergency food, which stays good in storage for up to 25 years, you can get up to $100 off a 2-week supply. Just click the link in the description and see what My Patriot Supply can offer. Today, I want to welcome Susan Bradford. She is a writer, author, and public speaker who provides commentary and analysis on foreign policy, real politics, and the agendas of the deep state. Her books are dedicated to pulling back the curtain on corruption within government and financial institutions to help restore integrity to the republic. She has written and ghostwritten many books and articles and appeared on the BBC, podcasts, radio programs, and a documentary on the Great Reset. Susan, welcome. How you doing?
Hi, Chris. Doing very well, thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me to speak with you today.
Yes, I've been looking forward to this show. And when I look at all the possibilities of how we've been manipulated and deceived as a human race, our reality really becomes far stranger than any work of fiction in existence, I believed. You know, from hijack countries, cultures, religions, and history to fabricated timelines that really could completely rewrite our existence on this planet. It's extremely fascinating, and I'm looking forward to your work. Is really awesome. But this is your first time on. I'd love it if you could tell us what opened your eyes to this hidden reality and what got you started down your path.
Sure. So I started off wanting to be a reporter to kind of have to be a witness of history. So I worked for a reporter. I worked for CBS News and for City News Service in Los Angeles. And then I wanted to focus more on international relations, because after I graduated from college, world was kind of moving more towards globalism, and the European Union was kind of coming together, and it was being billed as a common market that would be like a template for all of the other common markets in the world and would eventually be, you know, integrated together into one global system. So I thought, if I really want to be, you know, a well-versed foreign correspondent and journalist, I need to know what's happening there. So I did my graduate work at the University of Essex, concentrating on European integration. I earned a master's in international relations. And while I was there, I got the opportunity to kind of look at or to travel to the European institutions, like the European Parliament, European Commission. I got to meet with and interact with the diplomats and your heads of state. And I founded a publication called the European Review, which brought together leaders who were discussing various aspects of European integration. I know this is a long story, so I'll kind of speed it up a little bit. After kind of working in Europe and becoming very acclimated in European integration, I came back to the United States, worked for Fox News and for, you know, a few other news organizations, And but my eyes really got open to like this deception when I began working on the Abramoff investigation. Are you familiar with that? Because it might be, I know it happened quite a few years ago. You know what
yeah,
that is?
I am. But if for the audience, if you could kind of refresh what that was about.
Okay. So the Abramoff investigation was one of the most far-reaching corruption probes. It focused on a super lobbyist by the name of Jack Abramoff for his alleged corruption within Indian country. Like he was overbilling Indian tribes that they said and taking advantage of, you know, vulnerable Native people. So I worked on the investigation because I was able to see that his voice was omitted from the overall investigation. So I wanted to see what his perspective was. And when I began to research the story, I discovered that the Abramoff scandal had been entirely manufactured. This was a man who did not commit the crimes that he was alleged to commit. I mean, I had the paperwork that showed that he hadn't. The lies were fed by lobbyists to reporters who then ran with them. A PR firm marketed his guilt to the nation. And then the Senate leaders went right along and held hearings with witnesses who were then advised by the lobbyists and so forth. So I saw then that every aspect of what happens on Capitol Hill, every aspect of power is bought and paid for. So the news isn't necessarily what it appears to be, that there are a lot of very powerful special interests that want to shape our reality for some other private gain. And so once I began to realize that Abramoff had been set up, I wanted to know why the entire political establishment went along with it. And that's when I discovered that the deep state had been orchestrated and pushed into the United States through the back doors of American Indian tribes. And I'm talking about defense contracting, Carlyle Group, AIG, CIA, Homeland Security, even the different financial issues like the savings and loan scandals all had their origins in Indian country. And that was the means through which international bankers and foreign interests were actually projecting communism and socialism to the United States. So that's kind of what set me down, you know, the rabbit hole, if you will, to kind of, you know, find out more, a little more, and then to communicate that to the people, to share that with the people.
Man, the depth of lies and deception, it's unbelievable to me the more I look at it and the more I learn about our real history. Now, speaking about that, when it comes to the hijacking of our reality, this is going to be like a multi-part question. When did this occur? Where did this occur? Who is behind this? And how did it occur? You can break this down in any way you want.
Okay, so it starts with actually rewriting our history, redefining who we are, what we believe in. So how far back does it go? Historically, we can go back to the Roman Empire, but we don't have time to go back that far. So I'm going to put the point at maybe the era of the Rational Enlightenment. That was the period when the Vatican and the international bankers, like the Jesuits, the Rothschilds, and Central Asian rulers were kind of colluding. They were working together to create a new world order in which they held all the wealth and power within their own hands. So Confucianism was the basis of that. That's, you know, Chinese philosophy. And what Confucianism meant is that, or what one of the key tenets is that you could exploit grievances, like manufactured grievances. And then, that somebody has some type of privilege that is denied another person. So through the politics of envy, you can then upset the status quo, grab that other the target's wealth and power, and then you know, leave the status quo as it is. And so life then becomes a series of revolutions and wars, each time based upon grievances, each time where you reorganize society and the power and wealth under your own belt. But in order to do that, you have to continue to reshape reality. You have to portray leaders as legitimate when they're not. You have to condition the children to kind of reject the values of their parents with each new generation. So this was a tactic that they've been employing. They've employed it from the founding of our country where they kind of misrepresented our values, the reasons for why we went to war, the reasons of who was behind it, who stood to gain. And then I think after the world wars, we then went down this trajectory where the United States was fully brought into international intrigue. And then there was this agenda that was put in place for them to kind of reshape our reality. And that was the point at which these shadow corporations, shadow bankers were coalescing power within their own hands. They were controlled through interlocking boards of directors. And then they forged like private public partnerships. So what that meant is that they would rely upon the federal government for money. Which the taxpayer would have to, you know, would be obligated to pay. And then they would continue to kind of build their monopolies with the help of the federal government, you know, which would protect their markets, would eliminate competition for them, would create regulations or laws that would you know, shore up their market share. And so from like the World Wars onward, you saw this corporation kind of launch these corporations and international bankers launching an agenda where they wanted to pursue public policy for private gain. That meant expanding the federal bureaucracy and then putting more money into to the universities, and with the government funding came an agenda. They were working with Hollywood because Hollywood was created in hand in hand with the intelligence networks. Intelligence networks helped guide us into war, helped manage the wars. So they found out that Hollywood could be used to shape reality, to condition us into kind of accepting policies that they wanted or values that they wanted us to embrace. And, you know, with sports teams, you have like so much money that is being given to these groups through, you know, contracts and partnerships, that they're able to, you know, buy up sports teams and buy up assets where they control the levers of power. And then they have an interest, vested interest in kind of ensuring that nobody can challenge that power. So this gradually, like every aspect of society, they kind of work to ensure that they work in lockstep with each other to reinforce their power, their position, and to make it next to impossible for anybody to challenge them, because, you know, they're looking for ultimately dictatorship.
Wow. October, do you have any questions before we move on?
I have 1,000. I could talk to Susan for like hours and hours, but you know, I first heard of Carteria on Chris's show, I'm going to say about 6 months ago, and don't ask me who was talking about it because I couldn't tell you, but I'm a history major and I graduate in a couple months, and I found it fascinating. And that's because there's a lot of things in history that, you know, we looked at and studied, and I realized, you know, about midway through my college education, when I really started, you know, going down this rabbit hole, that a lot of things that we've been told are not true. And they've Correct. Been either reconstructed, deconstructed, and restructured for us to either believe them or get us all kind of on that same page. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing a little research this morning in preparation to talk to you. And I mean, bam, I mean, you don't have to be a brain surgeon to like realize, okay, so this is what I found. Tartaria, and there were tablets that were discovered in a Neolithic village in Romania in 1961. Now, they can't be carbon dated because of the, I guess, the materials that they're on, but they're dated, they speculate, to about 5300 BC because of the markings that were on these tablets. Okay. Mm-hmm. Some historians and archaeologists relate them to Sumerian. Some of them, I think that, you know, they're called proto cuneiform tablets. And there were also jewelry and clay figures found in this dig in Romania. Now, I'm going to fast forward a little bit as a historian. Now, I've heard the World's Fair in 1893 in Chicago was basically an attempt to completely, you know, wash the slate clean of Tartaria altogether. Now, what's interesting is that there were four architects that designed the World Fair's major buildings. They called it the White City. They were all white facades and everything. And and this is what cracks me up, okay, because I do not like Columbus. I'm not a big fan, obviously. I'm not going to go into why, but obviously I could tell you, I could talk to hours about that. But So John Welborn Root, Daniel Burnman, Frederick Law Olmsted, and Charles B. Atwood were the four architects to design it. And guess what they designed? They designed a Neolithic village, okay, because of its symmetry, beauty, and architectural style. Now, why would they pick a Neolithic era to design buildings for an 1893 World's Fair?
That's a very good question, because I'm sure there are many reasons for it, but the source of the power and from which the royal families who control our world draw is from Tartaria. So they appreciate that architecture. And there was also an element, this is something that I really didn't go into a lot, but the ancient Central Asian rulers, they claim that their history goes back like over a million years, that they had access to ancient technologies and that they were able to create art, like where beautiful statues and architecture, where they can just, it's like a printing machine, like they can like imprint, you know, where it would take us, you know, that a lot of time to actually
like a 3D printing machine, kind of like they did.
Mm-hmm. That they claim to have had. And so in that way, they're able to make this beautiful architecture.
Now, before we get too far, was Tartaria kind of like this global, more advanced civilization, maybe had their shit together a little bit better than we do? What was Tartaria in a nutshell?
Okay, so there are many aspects to it. The part I focused on is how the deep state traces to it. Tartaria was a part of Central Asia. There are many different tribes of people. There was giants, there were little people, there were people who are Caucasian, even though they're living in Central Asia, many different, like different tribes, and different customs. And so these were the groups that were trading with the Black nobility, which are the Italian merchants and the Vatican. So it's the area encompassing Central Asia.
I do have a question about that too. Central Asia, now for a long time, historians and archaeologists in the United States said that we are basically Asian, right? The first peoples of the United States came over the Bering Strait during the frozen, you know, ice age, right? And so so that was one of my questions, honestly, was, you know, our native first people here are supposedly ancestors of Asian descent of people. So then if I follow that train of thought as a historian, would the people in our first peoples in America, I mean, their origin stories and their history, there are a lot of similarities I find with the Tartarian research that I've done. Would you say that they're also Tartarian and that's why they've been trying to been wiped out because, you know, the elite didn't want their stories told or their history told?
That's interesting. Yes, they are from Central Asia, and that's part of the reason that the communist Chinese believe that they own North America, because they're saying, look, it's, you know, we were here first, you know, we were the first Americans. I think the reason that they were being wiped out is for a different reason. The elite, all they want money and power, and in order to get that, you have to sometimes, how they would approach it is to exterminate the populations. So within the context of the Native Americans, the Rockefellers set up the federally recognized Indian tribes. Like they were corralled onto land rich in oil and mineral rights in order to extract those mineral rights and take the money from the federal government that is reserved from Indians. You've got to, the Indians aren't going to allow that. So you've got to kind of beat them down. And so there's always been some type of agenda to kind of eradicate or to oppress the Indians because they're sitting on like really trillions of dollars in natural resources, you know, that a lot of elites want their hands on.
But do you think that Tartarians, I mean, if we root in history and we go way, way back to when they were thriving, do you think that they are directly related to our first people?
I don't think so. I mean, there were different, I mean, I know that there was some Tartarian architecture found in North America that predates even the founding of our country, but the Native Americans were more like they were indigenous, and so you found within Tartaria like there were some groups that were like the nomad, the Mongolians, they had beautiful houses and architecture, but they were agricultural. They were kind of passive, and they were warlike too. But they weren't really industrious in the sense that we would call it. So I think that the natives would maybe be from like the kind of the Asiatic peoples, but there were also a lot of like European types and other tribes that were more likely to have built the architecture.
Sorry, Chris, can I ask one more question
before you take it over?
How far do you estimate, well, actually it's a two-part question. How far do you estimate the Tartarian goes back, and are they directly descendant or related to Atlanteans?
That's a good question. I can tell you from the what I read from the Vatican archives and Vatican documents from Jesuits who went to Tartaria, the Central Asian leaders believe that they go back over a million years. The Mongolian Empire extended all the way to the Antarctic, and that's where allegedly there are some underground bases and advanced technology. And they also claim to there's a hell area of hell that's demonic, and that this area has a lot of advanced technology. So there is a train of thought that is that there is some Atlanteans had acquired this advanced technology. They were benevolent, but there was a satanic element that then destroyed Atlantis and took the technology and then used it for more nefarious purposes. But I haven't really studied Atlantis as such, but that's kind of the train of thought.
It sounds to me where the elites would have been born out of then, like that pool of the split where it went from this ancient advanced somewhat utopian society to fractionalized, destroyed parts of it, erased history, rewritten histories per se. Tartarian takes over, and then because I'm a historian, I'm all about chronological timelines. I like things to line up, right? So this goes like this. There's no straight chronological line that we can trace, right? So it is confusing for somebody who's got a brain like mine, who's been structured around academia and the scientific method. And then I look at this and I'm like, well, where's the proof? And then I start digging back and I'm like, well, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. And then that's why I'm asking these questions. I mean, I'm always thinking that the Rothschilds and the Medicis and the Renaissance are either connected or related. And I haven't done any research behind that, but I say that because the Medici were really the precursors for the Enlightenment. I mean, they were the ones who were bringing out of the Dark Ages, even through the Renaissance and the humanist movement, more about, power within oneself and your purpose of life is in your own hands kind of thing, and kind of took the power out of the church, right, at that time. And started, with the science, because Leonardo da Vinci was much more than just an artist, right? He was an amazing scientist. So I'm wondering really if it goes back to even then, where these families really took a stronghold throughout Europe and eventually trickled through the United States once we, became a country.
Okay. So I know you're interested in a timeline. So the timeline that I followed is that with the Roman Empire, that the Roman Empire was established, you have AD and BC, before Christ, Anno Domini, the year of our Lord, or after his death. Jesus Christ established the divine right to rule. That was a country under God. Through Jesus, if you held the sacred bloodline, if you were initiated, you could rule, because you would be a Christian. Those who opposed that were these Medicis or the Venetians, these merchants, maritime merchants who traveled into Tartaria and into the Central Asia. They wanted to establish monopolies. They drew upon the Egyptian mystery schools, which is very rational, or Aristotle. And they're also drawing upon Confucianism, the principles of Confucianism. So as they established monopolies, they partnered with mercenary groups, their army. And those would be the Khazars, the Mongols, the Turks. So as they began to establish their monopolies, they wanted to have control of the church, because the church ultimately determined who ruled. It was through Jesus. That's how the Vatican came into being, except that they established it through St. Peter. St. Peter said, upon this land, you shall build a church. He was the first to recognize Jesus. So the Vatican was controlled by, the mafia, by these black nobility, by these merchant families. And then they began using the rational enlightenment to overthrow Christian monarchs, because the Christian monarchs held the divine right to rule. They wanted to be God on earth. So as they continued moving into Central Asia, they fomented their own revolutions to kind of reorganize more of the Central Asian power under their control. They saw that these Mongols, for example, had a Pony Express or post system that served as the nation intelligence, where they could spy on their competition. And they could kind of use that intelligence to establish markets and to establish monopolies and control. So
it almost sounds like corporate espionage. It is, you know, what we consider now corporate espionage. I mean, but it, you know, obviously playing out a couple thousand years ago or a thousand years ago, is. But it sounds like, you know, and it's very Machiavellian, right? It's like the ends will always justify the means, no matter what you have to do to get power and stay in power. Because if I mean that's the prince, right? By Machiavellian, that's pretty much the gist of the book. So
that's exactly right.
That's why I'm wondering, like the Medici, and the Rod. I just thought maybe somewhere along the line they kind of, you know, met and then, you know, went
from there. They did. I was able to trace and you're right about how Machiavellian it is. In fact, they have the view that empathy and any concern for your fellow man is a sign of weakness. You want to just only think of yourself and your power and your self-interest. So
to be feared than loved.
There you go. That's exactly right from on the Prince. Rothschild, I traced them back to Central Asia, to kind of like a Mandarin family. And they partnered with the Jesuits and these kind of powerful merchant force like the Venetians, the Medicis. So they go back, you know, hundreds of years, and they had technology like to build silk, to create silk, which you could create easily, but they only had the technology that enabled them to sell it in Europe for a huge markup, and they could then easily create wealth. And they created gunpowder. So they were able to use that, to kind of use that as an advantage. But through the silk trade, you'll find that these merchants were able to kind of come into Europe through the Hanseatic League. And you'll also, if you follow the textile industries, you'll see that's how communism also came in, because that communism was Confucianism, and that's about fomenting rebellion and revolution to get more of the money, more of the power. So they came in through that way.
It's interesting because I know the Chinese emperor made it illegal and like shut down the Chinese border and made it a punishment by death if any kind of trade secrets were leaked about how they made silk and their silkworms. Mm-hmm. And they still managed to get it in Europe, obviously. But it's just interesting because people are like, oh, history is useless. It's like, no, it's not, because everything that's happening right now has happened before, or it's been in the works for thousands of years. So it's better to know stuff than to like be completely oblivious to how these things kind of have formed over and transpired and built up for the last couple thousand years. Because what's going on now, this is like a playbook. This isn't anything like surprising or new for somebody, I don't know, like myself probably, or you. So, right.
So that's correct. And they've been using the same playbook generation after generation, and all entirely to benefit themselves. And it's just the same families, the same tactics. So you're absolutely right.
Now,
sorry, Susan, Chris.
No, it's fascinating. I'm glad we're going there. Now, I want to go to the divine right to rule versus these bloodlines, which you've done a lot of research into. Now, the divine right to rule could possibly go back to, like you were discussing before, the times of Atlantis, be pre-human history that we know of. What about this bloodline rule? When did this first start coming around? And did they basically hijack the Abrahamic religions to gain power?
Yes, they did, to answer your last question. So the divine right to rule was established by Jesus. And what a lot of people don't know, I know this is going to sound sacrilegious, but this is what, history is revealing, that Jesus actually sired a child, and he did not die on the cross, but they actually used that the resurrection as a way, because the religions at the time, especially like Buddhism and other religions, promised eternal life. So like that you could be reincarnate. So Jesus, the message that Jesus had was that you'll have everlasting life through the Father. So that was kind of used to help kind of promote him. But he sired a child, and that child was bred into the Roman families with the condition that those Roman families would become initiated into the Christian faith. And they in turn would have the Jesus bloodline. And that's what established the divine right to rule, which is that God is at the center of society. The ruler answers to God and becomes a servant to the people. So that's how that was established. So for a while you had monarchs who held the divine right to rule. And then that was usurped. I mean, the Rothschilds have been trying to, in the Vatican, have been trying to usurp it for hundreds of years. But the key point was during the Napoleonic Wars. That was when the Rothschilds crashed the British stock market. And then from there, they were able to buy breeding rights into the British royal family through Queen Victoria. So from that point onward, you had an illegitimate Rothschild bloodline, like the serpent seed. And they in turn then bred themselves into the other European families throughout Europe. And they've since been kind of, their focus has been on creating puppet leaders who will ultimately serve them. And they're usually either bloodlines or they're severely compromised somehow.
When was Jesus's child infused into the Roman Empire bloodline, like, or married into the family? When was this? Like what?
That would have been, I think, around the time of Julius Caesar. So after Julius Caesar, you've got that's the beginning of the Roman Empire. The Caesar Augustus, he called himself the Son of God, but it was like that. That's the period. It's that's how you delineate history. It's BC before Christ, and then you have the new era, which is AD, Anno Domini, or after his death. So it's the life of Christ that mm-hmm. Creates that new era.
Yeah, because I know Caesar Augustus, I believe, ended his reign when he died in 29 AD. So I was just wondering, because, I mean, Christianity itself really wasn't, like, recognized or created until some estimates are 50 BC. So, I mean, that's a 75, 79-year timeline. That's pretty tight in history, considering that's, less than a century. I'm just curious. And as far as the illegitimate, infusion into the royal family, that what you just said to me, buying your way into that position, sounds a lot like, again, the Renaissance, the Medici. They were, merchants that became, de facto rulers, basically, of Florence, city state, which was what the most, or if not one of the most popular city states in all of Italy, which, eventually trickled throughout Europe and ruled Europe. So I find that really interesting that there's like a lot of these parallels that are happening like simultaneously. And then after the fact that seemed to mimic the playbook. I don't know. It's interesting.
They do. And it's those families, like the Medici, I think also have a connection with the Vatican. And they wanted what Jesus offered. And that was, they wanted the ability to appoint rulers. And that's where the Vatican came in. So instead
But the Medici's put four popes in office.
Yes, they did. Correct. It's all those black noble families. Black noble.
A lot of people don't know this, but it's quite interesting when you look back and you look at the traces of like the Middle Ages, Dark Ages, and then you have then you have the Renaissance, then you have Enlightenment, and then you have the Industrial Revolution. Like, these things aren't happening by accident. They're chronologically timed. Especially, like, think about it. If you're the society, for lack of better terminology, or family, or percentage of the population that's the elite, okay, and you want to completely orchestrate, a history or formulate a chronological timeline where you do these things like kind of slowly, methodically, like throughout time, right? Mm-hmm. You're going, but you already have the technology. A lot of the technology that we've rediscovered in the last, let's say, 150 years has been technologies that have been familiar to our planet for hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years. So how are you going to do that? You can't just, shut off superstition or, change a belief system. A core belief system is the hardest thing to change about a human being. So what are you going to do? Well, it's already worked for you in one sense because you've already seen it play out. Let's do it again, but let's just do it slowly and like herd the masses along this way until they get to the point. And I think where we are now is the masses are waking up and they're scratching their head. They're going, something isn't right. And we don't want to participate in this anymore. I know that's, for me, that's kind of how I feel about like where we are now. But Tartaria itself, I mean, it's fascinating You know, Chris actually introduced it to me, you know, about 6 months ago, like I said, and I have been just completely, as a history major, it's blown everything I thought about our history out of the water. And I am left scratching my head saying, where did it start? What is Tartaria? Where, you know, is it really gone? Are there any sects of it left anywhere? Any pockets, any people that are originally considered Tartarian? Do you know that?
That's a good question. I mean, I think it'd be like the Central Asia, but there are so many different groups of people. Like, we found bones from like the giants and others, you know, that are no longer with us. So I think there are tribes that have been eradicated, but I think the Central Asian genetics, like their bloodline, is playing out through the Rothschilds, the Vatican, and through these kind of elite families. And you'll actually see like that the dragon is one of their emblems. You'll see that dragon, you know, on a lot of their the noble signs. But you made a very good point about the technology, and they, since they had access to the technology going back hundreds of years, they wanted to make sure that they had it and the people did not. So with every time that they took over a society or they conquered a country or society, they hoarded all the artwork, they hoarded all the knowledge and science and technology, and they kept everybody else ignorant. And then they were able to implement it as they saw fit, to unleash like new technology that would benefit themselves.
I mean, so that goes in line too with like only nobles and elites being able to read, mm-hmm. you know, hundreds of years ago. That was considered something that common people just didn't do. I mean, there was no printed paper. I'm talking before the printing machine was, you know, invented in the 15th century. But I mean, typically, like basically men read, some noble women would read. I mean, they would read the Bible, but I mean, that's about it. And Chris, I've totally hijacked your show. So
no, it's okay.
That's a great question.
Like a history major's like dream interview. So
no, you can go ahead and address that, Susan, if you want.
Well, I can tell you that, Hillary Clinton, I wasn't a fan of Hillary Clinton, but she always said that they were very racist, or not racist, but sexist against her. The Rothschilds wanted only men to rule. They thought women belonged in, you know, the kitchen or they're handling the children. So men tended to dominate because the Rothschilds were calling the shots. But, you know, we did see a lot of women rulers prior to that.
Oh, that's kind of interesting that it's the Abrahamic religion's, you know, main tenets as well. I mean, they don't come out and say it so much, but I think it's changed. But yeah, it is.
Now, when it comes to the Abrahamic religions, to what degree were they hijacked, or were some of these even kind of created by some of these ruling bloodlines?
That's a good question. Christianity was established, of course, by Jesus.
Right.
It has been hijacked, one by the Vatican. And then like today you'll have the prosperity gospel, and the prosperity gospel is technocratic. So what that means is that you want the world to see you as blessed because you have money and power that you basically stolen or you've acquired through your inheritance. And those who haven't obtained that, you don't want them to think, oh, well, you've stolen it from me, or you've created a system that is taking that away from the people. So the people who don't have anything are the sinners. Like you know, God is not shining upon you. So it's a culture of greed. But the church has been taken over through its one global organization. It's called the World Council of Churches. This is the means through which Marxism is being projected into the pew. And that works. It was meant to provide like the value system as a foundation to the United Nations system, to the government. So they're also continuing to reshape values, define what it means to be, you know, good or evil. Judaism has been taken over by Zionism. The original Jews, and I know this is kind of going into some controversial territory, but the original Jews were. Came over with the Mayflower. They established the commercial law in the United States. They were a people of God who served the book. They also served as the priests and who looked after the money for the European aristocrats. They were very trusted and they were wise and decent people. The Zion Rothschild has hijacked Judaism to make it something that it is not. And then, of course, with Islam, the Vatican used Islam as like the infidel to help the Vatican conquer Judeo-Christian Europe. So then Islam then became hijacked. They try to radicalize it, you know, to weaponize Islam against, you know, other societies, like to create like a clash of civilizations, if you will.
Well, they've weaponized religion altogether, in my humble opinion. So
yes, they have.
I mean, have. What better way to get people in line and to rewrite history by stealing it?
No, that's entirely true. You can tell them what to think and how to arrange their families, what's, you know, appropriate or not. And you're right. So you,
I mean, entirely appreciate the mindset. Well, what you're saying right now is like a revelation, right? Where no pun intended on the biblical side, but sincerely, if this is all true, let's just say for a moment that it is, they're basically the shapers of reality.
That's correct. That's correct.
Yeah.
And that's why they have such a high self-regard, because I mean, they create our television shows, our movies, appoint the leaders, determine what is taught in our schools. I mean, they really control every aspect of society.
So how do we break away? How do we as like common people like myself and Chris and you and people who are somewhat educated or, you know, have devoted their life to learning more about this, how do we let them not do this anymore? Where is that point where, I mean, are we there? Have we arrived at that point in history where we're kind of like self-aware and self-actualizing and starting to scratch our heads and say, hey, something's not right? You know, because a lot of people say, well, I don't even vote because my vote doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And I understand that, you know, I do understand that sense of, you know, that saying, you know, that sense of being like, I don't feel like I have any power, because let's face it, when the Supreme Court rules that a corporation is to be treated like a human being and given and awarded the same rights, how do you fight that? Because that's basically saying money and power has now just basically taken over. And if we think our politicians control or do anything for us, we're silly, because they are all lobbyists that control our government, and lobbyists are funded by what? Oh, corporations.
Well, October, hold this thought, because I want to get into this towards the second half of the show about what's really happening right now and maybe solutions. But before we get too far into that, I want to stay in the historical aspect for a second. And I want to talk about, you know, speaking of complete control of our reality and perception and things of that nature, there's some that believe that they've even gone to the extent of causing global cataclysms to thin the herd or, you know, shape a certain outcome in our future. But there has been evidence that we've been through multiple cataclysms on the planet. To what degree, if it was man-made or caused, I don't know. I would like to get your thoughts on it, though.
Okay, I'm not a scientist, so I'll put it out, that's a disclaimer, but I believe that they do have weapons like through their laboratories, which are government funded, and of course, which in turn were lobbied by the contractors who in turn contract through these corporations that we've talked about. My understanding is that they do have like HAARP technology where they're able to maybe reshape the weather, like create floods or tornadoes that can be weaponized against the people or against societies. One of their greatest weapons is, I guess, war, where they have in the world wars, during the Russian Revolution, Stalin killed tens of millions of people. Stalin was a Rothschild bloodline. During the world wars, which are all like kind of manufactured by design and by funding through the Rothschilds, we saw millions of people losing their lives that way too. So they have throughout the ages entirely like exterminated groups of people, and then they come in and establish their own like governments over them, and then use those new systems to kind of extract the resources and control the people. So yes, they do create situations where they can kind of wipe people out in, you know, through chemical warfare and other means, so they can kind of take over and conquer.
Now, there's some that theorize that there was a global mud flood that could have been caused by, you know, some sort of cosmic, maybe asteroid or meteor, or, you know, could have been caused by some nuclear weapon that occurred. There's no exact, time frame, but maybe sometime in the 1800s that could have wiped out a good portion of humanity, and it would have been a great time for them to kind of repopulate and rewrite history all in one kind of drop. What do you think about that?
That would be in line with what they would do if they could do it. I have not personally studied the mud floods. I do know that some architecture has been found like under the ground that is so advanced, like far beyond what we could create today. So I think there is something to that, but I don't know exactly how that came about. I wouldn't put it past them to do something like that, though.
There are sites like Chaco Canyon in North America, and that was purposely buried. Göbekli Tepe, purposely buried. I believe Derin Kuyu in Turkey. I think it was specifically hidden. Now, all these sites that I'm mentioning right now are, you know, well, let's just say Göbekli Tepe. They're ranging that about what 12,600 years ago, which aligns with the last ice age and the flood. So I'm just curious, like, do you think like these sites are Tartarian related, or do you think they're just ever other advanced civilizations, Chaco Canyon's a lot newer. So let's focus on Göbekli Tepe for a minute. Do you think that these sites are Tartarian in nature, or are they just advanced civilizations that lived 12,000, 15,000, 20,000 years ago that, you know, perhaps had this shared same knowledge as far as technology goes and advanced enlightened beings? Or do you think that they're completely unrelated?
I would say that it was Tartarian related, because the history in Central Asia goes back, as I said, like, you know, millions of years. And they were the ones who had this advanced technology. When the Europeans first entered Central Asia, I mean, they could not believe the architecture, like how advanced it was, and that it was so advanced, yet the people who lived within, you know, those societies were very primitive. So somehow they had, you know, comparatively, you know, to the Europeans, somehow they had the technology to do this. So I think that the technology came from Tartary. And you know, there are different kind of theories about what happened to them. They may have been killed off, because I think they were very, the Mongolians and some of these tribes were savage, and they just exterminated people en masse. So, you know, I think there was some element of like that people were wiped out, and I think the technology that they had was stolen. And it does trace back to Tartary, to those areas.
Well, Göbekli Tepe, they say, I mean, and when I say they, I mean, the current archaeologists and studies that are coming out right now saying that was purposely buried under the sand. Mm-hmm. Now, to me, the same with the Dead Sea Scrolls that was hidden in a cave, right? These things in Derin Kuyu, even, mm-hmm. these places are, I mean, ancient beyond ancient, and they're purposely mm-hmm. hidden. So they're almost like perfectly preserved, like time capsules for a future generation, hopefully, of people to discover and maybe understand a little bit about our history. Do you think that Tartarians knew what was going to happen or what was going down? So they started to like bury and hide these, you know, texts and sites and things for future exploration of humans to hopefully uncover the truth?
That's really interesting. It's an incredible theory. I mean, it's possible. I know that like there were different, like the secrets would tend to be hidden by the religious classes, like by the monks. So they may have done that. You know, they may have been aware of the predatory mercenaries and known that if they got a hold of it, they could do something wicked with those secrets. So it's possible that steps were taken by, you know, by the monks and by some of these religious classes to kind of preserve history. Like we're only those in like a sacred group of people would know where they were.
You know, in my mind, I know that Göbekli dates 12,600 years ago. And for some reason, I'm stuck on that number. Sorry, Chris.
That's okay.
But who knows how long it's been buried, right? We have no way of really knowing. Maybe that was only buried a couple thousand years ago when all of this stuff was going down. And real quick, before I just want to say something real quick too. You mentioned initially in the interview that Tartary was in Central Asia and it had little people and giants and other, you know, kinds of people roaming around. I mean, even people say giants, blah, blah, blah. Well, we know for a fact that the Smithsonian has confiscated many burial sites and bones that are found in North America. And I'm talking in like Ohio, Texas, like different burial grounds that have been, you know, discovered. But if you just look back at James Cook, Captain Cook from the 18th century, when he landed on Easter Island, he, you know, with the, what do you call it? The nopale? I can't, what's the word? The giant Easter egg, giant Easter heads. But he wrote Rapa Nui. He wrote extensively about giants on Easter Island. So this isn't like a you know, isolated event that giants and little people have existed throughout the world and throughout our history. They're just gone now. I believe we've exterminated them, but yes.
But that's very interesting. And the arts back in the day were sponsored by the royal families who were working with the merchants to establish new markets. And you have books like Gulliver Travels, you know, in which Jonathan Swift wrote, you know, he kind of wrote about the giants and Lilliputians and different types of people that were kind of incorporated into novels and shared with the public at large. So I think a lot of these secrets and a lot of the knowledge, you know, was incorporated into the novels.
And
I agree.
You guys were just talking about how if the ancients or Tartarians or even the elites, the bloodlines maybe possibly knew a lot about what's coming in the future. Mm-hmm. And I think if they followed astrology, which they probably did, and you know, and mm-hmm. in fact, I'm sure they did. They did know, and I think that astrology is a profound tool for predicting. Not necessarily future events, but future energies and what time you should do things. And if we look at what's happening now, I believe this mm-hmm. is a multi-generational plan that has been mm-hmm. in the works for many years, possibly hundreds of years, based on astrology and the mm-hmm. position of the stars. And these guys believe in that stuff. These guys are occultists. They practice this mm-hmm. stuff, and they base everything they do off the stars, based on what I know. I'd like to get your thoughts on that, and if this basically is a plan based on occult practices that they're carrying out right now.
It's definitely based upon occult practices, and I can say that the Vatican, which is really at the source of this cabal, acquired its knowledge of astrology from Central Asia. So Central Asian rulers used it, and they were seen as more ancient. They had access to this kind of ancient knowledge, and somehow they were able to get power through knowledge of astrology. So that's where they got it from. It was from Central Asia. And also with the Rothschilds, I believe that after they crashed the Bank of England and were bred themselves into the royal families, that they were given 200 years to rule. That would put us at the ending date of that would be 2015. So I think that was a point at which they began to kind of lose their formal power, and then things began to change. But there's also other, other dynamics that changed. But that's part of the reason where things are kind of changing for them, and they're losing power.
Okay. Oh, you mean like all the trouble within the royal family?
Well, part yeah. of it.
Like the royal soap opera, and the fact that the queen has lived, almost 100 years?
Well, it seems that this whole thing is falling apart for them. I don't know what else they have to throw at us. It's gotten to the point where people that I never thought would question any of this stuff are, and that's a good thing. I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on this? Do you think that they're making enough mistakes to where we have a chance to turn this around? Like October was asking earlier, what are the solutions to this?
Okay. Everything is one thing that it's good to know is that they've created these false realities, but at the same time they've created false governments and institutions. So everything that they've created is color of law, so it's illegitimate. And this has been discovered by many researchers, but it gained a lot of momentum with the farmers class action from I think it was the 1980s. And that led to Nocera Gisera. Like they uncovered this fraudulent financial system. And I believe it was in 2013 that the debt that they had created, that debt was relinquished. And that as part of the settlement for all the their predatory banking practices, they were to create these prosperity programs. So I think they've tried to keep knowledge of Nocera Gisera hidden, like the knowledge of what they have to do hidden. And at the meantime, they're trying to kind of move ahead with their agenda for the New World Order. But increasingly, more people are becoming aware that it is illegitimate. So I think we need to act on that illegitimacy. I think we need to spread the knowledge of what they've done. what they, you know, what is right or not, what the law says they can and cannot do, and then to proceed accordingly. Because I think we can set up an entirely new system that is legitimate and that honors the rule of law, democracy, and which is, you know, based under God as it was meant to be.
Okay, sorry about that. Do you think a part of this is a global depopulation attempt? You look at the Georgia Guidestones, things that were written on there, and everything that is occurring with, you know, experimental injections and all the terrible things that could possibly be going on that are kind of coming to fruition right now. Do you think that is a part of this agenda, maybe for easier control of the masses?
Yes, they want to reduce the population so that we're more controlled because they think there are too many of us now. I believe that they believe they have a technology that enables them to live forever. Like they can create new bodies, they can transfer their consciousness through a chip. And so they think if they can live forever, they want to live in paradise. So they think they have all the money in the world, they have all the power, they have all the real estate. They want to kind of inherit the earth and reduce, you know, to eliminate all of the dregs, which would be like the people. So I think they do want to depopulate, and they want just enough people around to serve them, and, you know, and for the rest would be like their own world if they want to control it and have
sounds
it
like
themselves.
The Anunnaki.
It does,
right? Also sounds like biblical stories if you kind of parallel the two. You know, I want it, and you know, everyone's listening, and this is a, as a historian and a person who has an open mind, at first when I heard about Tartaria, I was like, oh God, another, you know, off the shoot, you know, theory about whatever. And then the more I read about it, the more I questioned it. And even talking to you, like what really, I think that the crux of this conversation today and what I'm taking away from it, it makes my mind just kind of like expand a little bit ever so much more when you're talking like giants and little people and people like, oh, giants weren't real. Really? Well, where do you think the DNA and the gene comes from? Giantism? Or where do you think little people come from? These aren't just like flukes of nature. Like everything that we have in our DNA, red hair, blue eyes, whatever, it comes from a source. So if we can change, you know, trace our lineage, I can trace mine, you know, to the 16th, you know, century so far in England and Germany and Poland. I know that I come from like one side is the Hallam. So that's my name, October Hallam. So, and I can trace that back to the 17th century. My point is, we know we can trace that because we have written documentation and we have bloodlines and everything. I have the same, very similar features as my grandfather, who's now gone, right? And my sisters and I have shared similar features. Why is this so hard for people to understand that these, you know, weird little like, you know, things that we, you know, some of us have moles, some of us have, you know, birthmarks, some of us are born with red hair. It's a rarity, right? You know, all come from someplace, just like little people and giants. And we have people who are reach almost 7 feet, like a Shaquille O'Neal. I mean, he's almost 7 feet tall. So I don't know why it's so hard for people to wrap their brains around, you know, like they were little people, you know. And I mean, the Homo Florentius in Central Asia, those people were about, I'm probably butchering the name, but you know, those people were found, what, a few years ago, and they were about 3 foot tall. I mean, and they weren't considered little people. They were regular human beings, but they only grew to about three and a half feet tall.
Correct.
I don't know what more, those are fossilized bones. What more evidence do you need? Like,
that's true. That's absolutely true.
I don't understand why people have such a cognitive dissonance to reality.
I think because they've been programmed and you know, through the media and their university system and whatever it is not taught, I think they automatically dismiss as like a conspiracy theory. And I think the powers that be probably don't want their minds to expand in those areas, because then you'd have to ask, well, what happened to them? And why did that happen? Like, why were they eradicated? And then once you begin, you know, going down that rabbit hole, you'll actually get to the core of the power, the sources of power, and a lot of the problems that we're facing today. So
those are out there in radio and podcasting land that don't know what conspiracy got its like origins. The CIA coined that term, by the way, everybody. last century. Yeah. Just to scare off us truth seekers out there. So you know that.
You guys were just talking about how, you know, this everything that we can look at today kind of seems like, you know, biblical prophecy, and, you know, prophecy written about in even more ancient texts. But in all of these, there's one common factor that I see is the battle of good and evil, or light and dark, and the light always wins.
Yes, it does.
So that's what, you know, to end on today, do you think that this is going to be the same story, that is the light is going to win again, right? They always have to.
They always have to. And the Freemasons, such that they are, they do work according to prophecy. And so what is meant to happen is that we're going to go through tribulations where the world's going to become so incredibly evil that we don't even want to, you know, to endure, you know, what the world has to offer. And then after that point, there'll be like a new age, and that new age will be a restoration of proper government, civility, virtue. So it's a new age under God that will follow tribulations. And the tribulations will be judgment for all these evildoers. That's right. That's where they're taking us.
Yeah. October, do you have anything else for Susan before we close out?
I do believe that we are in a battle of light and dark. Let's face it, you walk into a dark room, what's the first thing you do? You have to turn a light on to find your way. And that's what we're doing in these podcasts, right? We're trying to find our way through these, you know, very amazing and fantastic times. And I know people listening might say, why would you say we're living through amazing and fantastic times? Because we have choice. And that's a universal law, free will, free choice. You have a choice whether you're going to believe and you're going to bow down to, you know, what you're told is right and wrong, or if you're going to follow your gut, that little feeling inside of yourself that says, hey, something's not right. I need to like read and do a little bit of investigation and form my own opinion outside of mainstream media and social media. And exactly. Doubt everything. Doubt me. Doubt everything. Go find yourself, go read some books, and then go look a little bit deeper. Because once you start doing that dig, just like I did 10 minutes before the interview today, I Googled Tartaria just to see what was going to pop up, right? Of course, first thing is conspiracy theory. Second was, you know, it's a discovery in a Neolithic village in Romania in the 1960s. And here, our world, you know, fair almost like 70 years before that, based it off a Neolithic village. So you're going to see these like synchronicities that start connecting the dots. And once you do that, you're going to go down that rabbit hole, and I guarantee you, you won't come back out the same person.
Right. It's very well said. So once your mind is expanded, it will never, you know, return to its original dimensions.
You become like a sponge. You just want to like soak up more and more information. So yeah.
A big part of that is what they would call kind of like revelation of the method, where they have to show us a bit of what they're doing. Do you think that that's a real thing amongst these occultists and elite practices?
I think part of it is that it's part of their magic. So it's like predictive programming. You've heard of like The Secret, you know, as you believe you are. So they're putting their programming out there on what they want to manifest. Oh. So there is that. And also part of their moral system involves that they have to, that we have to consent to what they're doing to us. And they view us as kind of stupid people, you know, like, look, we told them, we've shown them, they're still going along with it of their own free will. So they do have to kind of show us what they're going to do.
Man. Well, yeah, October is right. We do live in very fascinating and fantastic times, terrifying at times, but I think I think we live in very critical times, and I think the light is going to win like we always do. So Susan, thank you so much for coming on. That was fantastic information. For those that want to find out more about you, your books, give them website, social media, all that good stuff.
Thank you. You can go to my website, which is www.susanbradford.org. Has all my books and contact information, and you can find my Gab account. I definitely need to do more by way of social media. So far it's kind of a little basic, but it's that you can visit that page.
Awesome. Well, Susan, thank you so much. October, thank you for hosting me today.
You're welcome.
And we will be back again next week with a new episode, and we'll see you all then. Have an excellent evening.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.